And it is a great joy for me to be here tonight. I see quite a number of faces that are new to me. It's good to be with the Lord's people here, and we look to the Lord for his blessing as we turn to the Holy Scriptures. We appreciate all who are present at the meeting. And all the readings I want to take will be from the book of Psalms, and the initial reading in Psalm 31. Psalm number 31. And we read here at verse, just a selected reading, verse 9. Have mercy upon me, O Lord, for I am in trouble. Mine eye is consumed with grief, yea, my soul and my belly. Verse 12. I am forgotten as a dead man out of mind. I am like a broken vessel, for I have heard the slander of many. Fear was on every side, while they took counsel together against me. They devised to take away my life, but I trusted in thee, O Lord. I said, thou art my God. My times are in thy hand. Deliver me from the hand of mine enemies and from them that persecute me. Verse 19, O how great is thy goodness, which thou hast laid up for them that fear thee, which thou hast wrought for them that trust in thee before the sons of men. Thou shalt hide them in the secret of thy presence from the pride of man. Thou shalt keep them secretly in a pavilion from the strife of tongues. Blessed be the Lord, for he hath shown me his marvellous kindness in a strong city. For I said in my haste, I am cut off from before thine eyes. Nevertheless, thou heardest the voice of my supplications when I cried unto thee. Now, a word from Psalm number 52. Psalm 52. And verse 7. Lo, this is the man that made not God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches, and strengthened himself in his wickedness. But I am like a green olive tree in the house of God. I trust in the mercy of God forever and ever. I will praise thee forever because thou hast done it, and I will wait on thy name, for it is good before thy saints. Now, a verse from Psalm number 102. Psalm 102. And we'll come into this chapter at verse 6. I am like a pelican of the wilderness. I am like an owl of the desert. I watch and am as a sparrow alone upon the housetop. Verse 12. But thou, O Lord, shalt endure forever, and thy remembrance unto all generations. Thou shalt arise and have mercy upon Zion, for the time to favour her, yea, the set time, is come. Verse, and toward the end of the chapter, verse 25. Of old hast thou laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of thy hands. They shall perish, but thou shalt endure. Yea, all of them shall wax old like a garment, and as a vesture shalt thou change them. And they shall be changed, but thou art the same, and thy years shall have no end. The children of thy servants shall continue, and their seed shall be established before thee. And our last port of call will be Psalm 119. Psalm 119. And we'll read here at verse 81. Psalm 119 and verse 81. My soul fainteth for thy salvation, but I hope in thy word. Mine eyes fail for thy word, saying, when wilt thou comfort me? For I am become like a bottle in the smoke, yet do I not forget thy statutes. Verse 86. All thy commandments are faithful, they persecute me wrongfully. Help thou me. They had almost consumed me upon earth, but I forsook not thy precepts. Quicken me after thy loving kindness, so shall I keep the testimony of thy mouth. Now that's the reading, a varied reading. We trust the Lord's blessing upon his word and our consideration together. Some time ago, maybe the end of last year, beginning of this year, I happened to be on a flight and it stopped just for a short time in an airport in the south of Ireland, the west coast of Ireland, in Shannon Airport. And we had to disembark and maybe walk around the airport for half an hour or thereabouts. I was rather surprised to see very prominently displayed as a mural on one of the walls in the airport the words of a British poet. Wouldn't maybe be so common to see English poetry on display in the south of Ireland. But there it was. It was the complete poem of an English poet called John Clare. Wasn't very well known, wasn't very prominent. Belonged to the period of the Enlightenment. A man who spent some time in mental institutions. And yet he could produce some rather remarkable poetry. I think the poem that was on the wall was written when he was in asylum in Northampton in England. And it's one of the most pessimistic pieces that you could ever read. The verses, the poem is entitled, I Am. I Am. And the opening lines, I couldn't quote it all, I have it all in my mind, but opening lines, I am. Yet what I am, no one knows or cares. I am forgotten like a memory lost. I am the self-consumer of my woes. In fact, just at that very time that I was in that airport, there was a assignment of American Marines also landed into the airport on their way to Afghanistan. And I noticed one by one, they were reading this poem. You see, why would a modern airport put a piece of text, such a pointless, pessimistic piece of poetry on the wall? I am, yet what I am, no one knows or cares. I think that part of the reason is it reflects the emptiness of the human heart as far as modern man is concerned. It reflects the nihilism of our modern age, the pessimism of the secular and atheistic culture in which we live. But of course, that may be how John Clare felt. But he was profoundly wrong. Because there is no one can ever really truly say, I am, yet what I am, no one knows or cares. Especially a believer. And I want to think, just in the meeting tonight, I want to think about a number of similes that we have from this ancient Bible book of poetry, in which various poets are giving us a description of their feeling in the guise of a very graphic simile. They are the only four of their kind in the book of Psalms. I'll quickly go through them and then we'll come back and take a closer look. In Psalm 31, this is not the order of reading, but we did read first of all in Psalm 31, the expression there is, I am like a broken vessel. I am like a broken vessel. We have read the expression in Psalm 102, better known, I am like a pelican in the wilderness. I am like an owl in the desert. I watch and am alone as a sparrow upon the housetop. But I am like a pelican in the wilderness. And then we have read another expression, another simile in Psalm 119. I am like a bottle in the smoke. And finally, I'll come to say a word or two about the rather more positive comparison that we have read from Psalm 52. I am like a green olive tree in the house of the Lord. And you'll come with me. I know that you're bound to be a lover of poetry. And you come and engage your mind just for 35 minutes now on these very, very illustrative images that have been turned into words. I think that each one of them is making a specific point. Maybe I should tell you what they are now, and then we'll be able to investigate them a little more closely. I am like a broken vessel. That's his uselessness. I am like a pelican in the wilderness. That's his loneliness. I am like a bottle in the smoke. That's his hopelessness. I am like a green olive tree in the house of the Lord. That's his freshness. And we'll examine. How would you compare yourself tonight? If I were to give you a blank sheet of paper and ask you to choose a comparison from ordinary life that would some way or another reflect your emotions and how you feel, I wonder what comparison you would choose. There may be someone here and you feel that you can in some degree identify with what David said in Psalm 31. I am like a broken vessel. Wasn't always broken. What do you do with a broken vessel? You scrap it. You discard it. It's not worth anything. It had seen better days. There were times when this vessel was in prime condition. There were times when it sat upon the shelf or was employed in the pantry and it was doing its job. But something has happened and what used to be a serviceable vessel has now become broken and shattered. I possibly, for all I know as a visitor here, I cannot tell. Maybe I'm speaking tonight to someone here and that's exactly how you feel. You feel there was a time in your life when things were better. There were times in life when you had much more potential than you have just tonight. Something has happened. I don't know what had happened to the vessel. A vessel could be broken because it's dropped. Somebody lets it down. Maybe you have been dropped. Maybe there is a believer here tonight and you have become hurt, damaged, fractured, shattered because somebody that should have kept you up has let you go and you have gone down. And tonight you're in the meeting and you're emotionally crushed and you have been damaged, dropped, damaged and just about to be discarded. That's the kind of feeling that was in the heart of David as he wrote this psalm. In fact, he makes a number of I am statements in the psalm. When you get time, you can go through them. He says, I am in trouble. Anybody here in trouble? He says, I am forgotten as a dead man out of mind. Are there people and they just bypass you? And they just treat you as a cardboard cutout? And they just act toward you as if you're a nonentity and you don't really exist. Have you just become a forgotten figure, as some are concerned? And then he made a statement, I said in my haste, I am cut off before thine eyes. He said this whole thing got so bad that not only was I in trouble and not only was I forgotten by you, but he said in my panic, I actually said that God has forgotten me. I am cut off from before thine eyes. And he adds this simile as he thinks about the accumulating difficulties of life. I am like a broken vessel. One of the problems with some of these psalms is, and it's true of Psalm number 31, we could not just say for sure when it was written in David's experience. There is maybe a little hint of historical background. And one expression that he makes in this particular psalm, he praises the Lord. He said, "Blessed be the Lord which has showed me his marvelous loving kindness in a strong city." Now, I'm inclined to think, and I won't be fighting with you if you have a strong opinion, otherwise there'll be no big issue about it. I'm inclined to think that this possibly goes back to that particularly tragic time in David's life in the city of Ziklag. It was a fortified city in southern Judah. And you remember that he wept, and even his own men were going to discourage him. We're going to stone him. And the Bible tells us he encouraged himself in the Lord. And he wept until he could weep no more. Maybe it is a reference to his experience in the city of Keilah, when he was surrounded and besieged, and he was just almost swallowed up by his... Whatever it is. If it was that period in David's life, and I'm very happy to locate it there. If it was that period, David was just a young man. The best of his life is still to come. And yet here he thinks, "I'm finished." He thinks it's over. "I'm a broken vessel. I'm past my best. I've reached my shelf life. My best before date, it has come up. I'm a broken vessel." And as a young man, perhaps in his late teens, persecuted by Saul, hunted and hounded for place from place to place, betrayed by some of his own fellow tribesmen, he said, "My life has just been totally shattered and it's over. This vessel will be taken up by God. And some of the finest days are yet to be." I say, dear Christian, do not give up too quickly. Do not throw in the towel. Do not despair unduly soon. You might be tempted. Your emotions might be taking over tonight, the very thoughts of your mind, and you feel you can identify with this man. Well, here it is. He thought he was finished, but still, God has a very special service for him. You say, how did he get out of his discouraged state of mind? What was there helped him to overcome these problems and perplexities that seemed to be pressing on his soul? Well, he said, he said three things. And I don't want to be going back to the psalm and taking up the time reading again, but you just take a mental note of it and investigate it and enjoy it in your own soul. First of all, he said, "Thou art my God." Seven times in the book of Psalms you get that statement, "Thou art my God." He said, "My own friends and my neighbours have let me down and they have dropped me like a broken vessel." But he said, there's a relationship with thyself that is intact. "Thou art my God." The present reality of a relationship with God. Dear Christian, maybe that's what you will have to lean upon tonight. Other relationships may or may not have failed. Thank God there is one relationship on the vertical that will never disappoint and it will never fail. And because of that relationship, David says, God is the God who holds. He says, "My times are in thy hand." He said, "These dark days of trouble through which I'm passing," he said, "I cannot really give a perfect account of them." He said, "Things in my life seem to have become unhinged and unstuck in the middle." But he said, "I'm going to rest with this, that my times are in his hand." It's great to know, dear Christian, that we have a God who holds. He holds your times and he holds my times. A little further down the chapter, he says, Thou shalt hide them in thy pavilion from the strife of tongues. One of the problems that David had was gossiping people. When he was in trouble, everybody was ready to comment upon his situation, and they all could give an explanation for his situation. There were plenty of wagging tongues. He said, I cannot justify myself with every person. But he said, Lord, you can hide me in thy pavilion from the strife of tongues. You know, the Lord can still do that, dear Christian. If there's someone here tonight, and of course I'm just trafficking in what I don't know anything of whatsoever. If there's someone here tonight and you're the subject of unjustified slander, the natural thing for you to do is to justify yourself and try a little piece of self-vindication. I would advise, dear friend, a different policy. Remember, there's a God who holds and there's a God who hides. He can hide you in the pavilion of his protection from the strife of tongues. David had God with him. There's an interesting thing. You can never injure a man that has God with him. So, I would advise you to be careful what you say about a man who has God with him. You can never injure him. It's impossible to injure a man. I mean, really to injure him. If you slander a man who has God with him, instead of injuring him, you only hurt your own soul. If you're going to down someone by slander, I would advise you to target a man who has not the presence of God with him, because if he has, you're beaten before you say the first word. David says, I will leave my case. The God who holds my times, the God who hides in the pavilion of his protection. And he said, Lord, thou heardest the voice of my supplication. He holds, he hides, he hears. And he says, the God who can provide such rich services, he says, I'll depend upon him. And even though I feel like a broken vessel, he said, I will lift my eye and heart heavenward, and my hope will be firmly placed in him. So I hope if there is someone here tonight, and you can fit into the first picture, that what we have said about David might be a little encouragement to you in the midst of the discouragements of life. The second picture that I want to come to quickly is Psalm 102. We're taking a jump across to Psalm 102. In fact, there's a triple picture in this particular psalm. I am like a pelican in the wilderness. I am like an owl in the desert. And I am like, or become like, or as a sparrow alone upon the housetop. Those three birds. I know the reference to the Lord Jesus. And we link this psalm with the Garden of Gethsemane. That's not particularly the route that I'm going down tonight. Just taking it in its setting as human experience. I'm particularly the first one. I am like a pelican in the wilderness. I don't need to tell you that a pelican is a water bird. What's a pelican doing in the wilderness? Has it been blown off course? Maybe in its migration, it didn't arrive where it was intending to go, and through force of circumstance, it got blown off course, and the bird that loves the water has ended up sitting marooned, lonely, desolate, isolated in some wilderness. Dislocation, if you like to write that word beside the first figure. The second figure, he said, I am like an owl in the desert. Well, you know what an owl, the kind of situation that an owl appreciates. They love to perch themselves in some derelict building. Some say the ruins of some old castle. And you'll get an owl that will sit up in the corner and it will watch everything and it will hoot. And it will make its noises. And everything around it just bespeaks ruin and desolation. Not dislocation like the pelican blown off course, but desolation. It was maybe once a fine castle. But those days are past and what was once a stately castle has just become a heap of desolate ruins, and the owl is there, and it just hoots with its plaintive call in the midst of those. And then the sparrow alone. I watch and am as a sparrow alone upon the housetop. Actually, you don't often see a sparrow alone. They're usually squabbling, and they're gregarious little birds, and there's usually a crowd of them. I don't know if you are much interested in biblical metaphors. It's a fascinating study. And if some of these young people would want a study that would engage them very, very usefully, take the book of Psalms and go through the metaphors or the similes of Hebrew poetry. Just take a notebook and go through them all. It will keep you going for a few months. And quite a number of these graphic figures, you'll need to know a little piece of Oriental background if you're going to get the full good of them. Sometimes it might do good to have a handbook at your side that can give you some descriptive scenes from an Eastern setting. One of the little books that I love to have, it's not altogether that small. It was written by a man called William Thompson. And William Thompson travelled in the land of Israel. I was nearly going to call it by its misnomer, Palestine. But he travelled in the land of Israel back in the late 1800s, and he produced a book called The Land and the Book. It's a very interesting book, very easy reading, maybe 700 or 800 pages, and you'll find it absolutely crammed full of illustrative material that will cast light upon many of these figures that I've just been speaking about. And in this particular occasion, in fact, I have a little section here. I'll read something to you. He's speaking about the pelican in the wilderness. He said, "I have seen the pelican of the wilderness, as David calls it." He said, "I had a good opportunity." He speaks about one that was shot, and its wing was damaged, and it was left sitting. He said, "I had good opportunity to study its character. It was certainly the most somber, austere bird I ever saw." He said, "It gave me the blues even to look at it." I don't know what the blues are like, but it sounds like a fairly disconcerting condition. "It gave him the blues even to look at it." As he looked upon that bird sitting with its big gob upon its chest, it was just a picture of total melancholy. Tell me this. Is there any believer here tonight and you have been blown off course? If I had been here, say, pull out a date out of the air. If I had been here in 2007 and I had asked you, what do you think things will be like in your family 5 years down the line in 2012? And you might have told me, well, we're aiming for this and we're aiming for that. And here we're in 2012, but the goals have not been realized. And the winds of adversity have blown into your life and you're off course. And your head is dropped. And you're just, the changes that have come have made you just as melancholy as a pelican. Maybe there's a brother here tonight and you had once a business. It was quite impressive. It was strong. It was prosperous. It was doing well. But maybe through market changes or different things that can happen, your business has just been devastated. And you look out tonight upon what once was a prosperous little empire, and tonight it's just a shambles. You're like an owl in the desert, just looking upon the ruins and the wreckage of what was once most important. Maybe there's a Christian here, you're like a sparrow. You know, I'll read you another little bit of Thompson. He speaks about the sparrow in a number of passages, Psalm 84 and so on. And then he comes to comment upon this verse, "I watch and am as a sparrow alone upon the housetop." He says, when one of them has lost its mate, He will sit on the housetop alone and lament by the hour his sad bereavement. And he says the little bird will bleat his heart out so plaintively as he sits alone upon the housetop. Maybe there's someone here tonight and you've been there. Maybe that seat, that chair beside you, it used to be filled by someone who had been your companion, your loving, loyal companion for many years. They're gone. Many a night you watch. Through the sleepless hour, you just watch. And you're alone, like a sparrow upon the housetop. Dear Christians, things in life, the Bible is a book of great reality. And the Bible brings us right down by these colourful pictures to see things as they really are. In your life, has there been dislocation? Has there been devastation? Has there come death that has severed the most precious of it? And you're just like, sorrow fills your heart and you're bowed just like a pelican in the wilderness. Well, you say, was there any answer for the problem? Actually, if you read Psalm 102, in the first, I think it's the first 11 verses, you'll see it when you look at it, 7 times, and then the emphatic I, he speaks about I am withered like grass, I am like a sparrow, I am like a pelican, I am like an owl, it's I. When you get to verse number 12, to the end of the chapter, 7 times he speaks about the Lord. Speaks about the Lord. And he changes his focus. He no longer concentrates. He's no longer absorbed in his own personal trouble. He looks heavenward. He says, Lord, thou shalt endure. Takes a look at the material creation. And he says, thou, Lord, in the beginning hast laid the foundation of the earth and the heavens. He said, they're the work of thy hands. He said, they shall be changed, but thou art the same, and thy years shall not fail. You know, dear believers, there are some times in life when you have to reach this. No matter what changes come, I have to lift my vision and refocus my faith on a God that never changes. Just God in the steadfastness of his unchanging character. That's how the Old Testament almost concludes. I am Jehovah, I change not. I often say, people ask me when I come to a country like this, they say, David, where do you live? And of course I answer them, I live in Northern Ireland. Then they maybe ask, what part of Northern Ireland do you live in? And I'd say a little town called Lurgan, and outside that a village called Dollinstown. I live in a little place called Dollinstown. Mr. Smith and some of the others here know well where it is. But that's not really true. I don't live in Dollinstown. Where do I live? I live here. In the 2 square feet that I'm standing, that's where I live. I'm circumscribed by reason of my physicality, corporeality, my mortality. I can't live in Ireland when I'm in America. And when I'm in America, I can't live in Australia. And I depend upon food that is, and the air that is just here. If I'm going, I live here, right here. Dear Christians, tell me this, where does God live? In the great energy of his eternal being, unsupplied by any derived assistance. You know, Christians in Australia can have as much of God as Christians in America. And Christians in Chile as much as Christians in China. And Christians in Ireland as much as Christians in Iceland. Because God, in the unlimited energy of his eternal being, he's the great unchanging Jehovah. I am. That's what the psalmist, 7 times he says, there's a God. Thou art the same. I know things are not the same in your life, dear Christian. Bereavement has come in. Business problems have arrived. Unexpected circumstances have afflicted your life with changes. But you need to have times. There will be times when the only comfort you will have for your spirit is just to remember this. No matter what changes have come, I'm associated with a God and he never changes. No change. No change. Jehovah knows. The first man that was like a broken vessel, he had great confidence in God's security, that God can hold me and hear me and hide me. The second psalm, where the problem is just like a pelican in the wilderness, it's not now uselessness, it's loneliness. And the comfort for this psalmist is in God's steadfastness. God endures. He's the same despite all the changing years. Now, I'll have to come to the third one. We're right now into Psalm 119. And the psalmist tells us there in verse number 89, another one of these personal similes, I am become like a bottle in the smoke. Now again, we'll have to investigate its Eastern background. What exactly does it mean? Well, the first thing, of course, is to recognize that it doesn't mean a bottle as we know a bottle. It's not a glass bottle. It's not an earthenware bottle. It's a skin bottle. And what does it mean to have a skin bottle in the smoke? And what would you feel like if you were to be described as a bottle in that situation? Well, Part of the background is this. The old skin bottles that they made from a goat. They killed the old goat and they stretched out, maybe got two goat skins and put them together, and you had a couple of the legs out there and a couple of, and then the neck. And they stitched it up and sewed it round and so on. And when some of these bottles had been used, they were emptied, they hung them up. They hung them up in an old oriental dwelling, a poor man's dwelling, in order to dry them. Hung them up by the tail and the head pointed down. And of course in those old dwellings, simple dwellings, they didn't have chimneys. And the only escape for the smoke was maybe through a door. And the most of the smoke didn't escape at all. And it just climbed up beyond the old fire. And it curled round toward the ceiling where this old bottle was hanging. And as the smoke curled around the bottle, it became blackened. And it became brittle. And it was hung up to dry. You know, we have an expression about somebody being hung out to dry. Were you ever hung out to dry? It can happen, you know. It can happen. They can take you by the tail. And you're empty. And they could hang you up. And when the smoke, I have known people hung up to dry, and you know they got well blackened. You can get blackened. I've already been talking about the things that people say, blackened. He speaks about his persecutors and those who were speaking against him in Psalm 119. And blackened and brittle, and you feel as if you just, if you reached up to touch it, it would just crumble. It has lost its elasticity. And brittled by the smoke and the heat, it couldn't bear any more pressure, just about to disintegrate. You know, there are people. Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm talking total nonsense and I'm soon going to be finished talking anyway. But it could be there's some Christian here tonight and you feel as if you're just upside down. And you've just been hung up. And it's maybe a student at school. Did you ever find yourself in circumstances where the whole atmosphere around you was uncongenial? I can't speak for this country, I don't really know, and you'll forgive me, I'm talking on a smaller scale. But sometimes I maybe go to a little assembly in the country, and I see some younger people there, and always delighted to see younger believers in their late teens and so on, and I'm asking about them, and some of the Christians tell me, oh well, Jane, she's going next term to university. Or James is going to university. You know, I feel keenly for that, because some of those Christians are taken out of very sheltered environments and they go away to some of the bigger cities, maybe in England or somewhere, and into a university campus. And I can tell you, Christians, they're just like a bottle in the smoke. And the smoke of secularism. And the smoke of sensuality. And the smoke of atheism is just curling around them day and daily. And it's not going to be easy. That's what the psalmist felt like. I take it the author of Psalm 119 was a young man. Wherewithal shall a young man? And he was a young man possibly in education. He said, I'm wiser than my teachers. I'm wiser than the ancients. And in the pursuance of his education, he found circumstances, an atmosphere, a situation that was uncongenial. And he just felt like a bottle. Like a bottle. Like a brittle bottle blackened in this smoke. You say, what was his preservation? What did he fall back upon? Well, he very beautifully follows this simile with this little expression. He says, yet do I not forget thy statutes. He says, in my difficult situation, the only thing that kept me spiritually safe and sane was God's precious word. Young people, can I say to you, whether it's a place of education, whether you're pursuing business, whether you're in an environment that is very, very difficult, there's one thing you cannot afford to do. You cannot afford to neglect God's word. You saturate your soul with God's statutes. You let the very principles of the Bible seep into your bloodstream. You know, Mr. Spurgeon said about John Bunyan. He was talking about Pilgrim's Progress. And if you read through Pilgrim's Progress, you can see that it's just crammed with allusions to Scripture. You could read any page of Pilgrim's Progress and you could tell four or five scriptures to which Mr. Bunyan was alluding in his allegory. And Spurgeon said about Bunyan, he said his blood was bibline. And he said, prick him anywhere and the blood will be bibline. What he meant was this. When Mr. Bunyan wrote his book, he had so much of Bible language in his mind and in his soul that his very language was bibline when he began to, you need that. You need to have a bloodstream that is biblical. The vitamins of God's precious word. He said, I am become like a bottle in the smoke, yet do I not forget thy statutes. You maybe, young man, are working in a place and the standards are not God's standards and you're not finding it easy. You see, people in the Bible didn't find it easy. Well, don't be discouraged. You make this book the man of your counsel and God will preserve you through the Holy Scriptures. For the broken vessel, it was God's security. For the dislocated pelican, it was God's steadfastness. For the bottle in the smoke, it was God's statutes. And finally, we have the fourth simile, positive. In Psalm number 52, he says, I am become like a green olive tree in the house of the Lord. Well, there's a great simile. That's a very positive picture with which to almost conclude the meeting. We can each aim at that. Isn't it great to be like an olive tree in the house of the Lord? To make a contribution to the assembly. I'm giving it an application to the assembly. There's some people, and they're more like a thorn bush in the assembly than anything else. If you went too close, you could get injured. They're always complaining. And they're awkward. And you could hardly please them. And everything upsets them. And they're a little bit thorny. And a little bit prickly. They're more like a cactus plant. No, he says, no. He says, I'm like a green olive tree. And he said, I'm planted, I trust in the mercy. He said, I'm firmly rooted in the soil of faith. And he said, in the house of the Lord, what does an olive tree do? Well, if you have an olive tree, I'm thinking again of an eastern setting. It's a great tree, you know. It wasn't a particularly beautiful tree externally, but it was a tremendously serviceable tree. From the olive berries, you could get oil to make a perfume, anointing oil. From the olive berries, you could get oil for cooking. From the olive berries, you could get oil for burning a lamp. And from the one tree, you could get a little bit for fragrance. You could get a little bit for food. And you could get a little bit for light. You see, it was a very serviceable tree. You know, there are people I have met in assembly fellowship all over the world. Brethren and sisters. And they were just like that. They were so positive in their contribution. I have known brethren. I'm sure there are brethren here in Marion. And you bring to the assembly a little bit of food. When you have made your contribution, the Christians have a little bit of oil by which they can do a little bit of spiritual cooking. Maybe you bring to the assembly a little bit of light and you make a contribution that increases the brightness of the testimony. Maybe you bring to the assembly a little bit of fragrance. You're like the oil employed for anointing. In an Eastern setting, oil was used as a refreshment. In a sticky, sweaty atmosphere, how refreshing if olive oil could be applied in the anointing. You know, the Apostle Paul, I think we were reminded at the conference the other day, he said about certain people that they refreshed my spirit. I want to say to myself, and I say to you, dear Christians, we should all make it our aim to be a green olive tree in the house of the Lord, so that we might make a positive contribution and bring to the house of the Lord. This is the answer to this man. I know what you say, but it was easy. No, it was anything but easy if you read the whole psalm. But he said, despite the problems, I will not in any way be diverted from my purpose. He said, this will be the purpose of my life, to bring blessing, to bring advantages to the house of the Lord. I trust that God will encourage us. Well, you say, I don't know. I feel more like a broken vessel than I do like a green olive tree. I feel more like a pelican in the wilderness. I feel more like a bottle in the smoke. Just in my last word, let me say this. There's one likeness in the psalm that I've omitted. These are the only four personal similes. I mean, I am like. These are the only four of them in the book of Psalms. There's one that's very close, and I'll have to finish with it. The psalmist says in Psalm 17, as for me, I shall behold thy face in righteousness. Listen to these words, dear Christians. I shall be satisfied when I awake with thy likeness. You know, we all will have a likeness. Not the likenesses that I've been talking about. Thank God every Christian here will wear the imprint of Christ's image eternally. We commenced this meeting with a hymn of good old Darby's. Mind you, he could write hymns. He could write some other things as well. But he could write some great hymns. O Lord, thy love's unbounded. I enjoyed the singing of that hymn as well as its sentiments. But I'll tell you this. Well, if I were to tell you what I think is maybe Darby's greatest hymn, and I would be pushed to classify, but I think maybe his greatest hymn, I'll get you to sing a verse of it at the end. Is it so? We shall be like thy Son. Is this the grace which he for us has won? Father of glory, thought beyond all thought in glory, to his own blessed likeness brought. Dear Christian, I don't know what you feel like tonight, but let me tell you this. Every one of us will be like him as eternal ages roll their course. May God grant, if we will be like him physically, morally, and eternally, we will increase in our likeness to the Saviour until we see him face to face. Thank you, and shall we conclude the meeting with a brief word of prayer before we sing.